This is the State of Things from the American Tobacco Historic District. I'm Frank Stacio. The U.S. Department of Education recently canceled nearly $11 million in student loans after two for-profit colleges owned by Dream Center Education Holdings failed accreditation standards and eventually closed their doors. Students of the colleges sued, demanding their loans be voided. The impact of this rippled across the country and landed here in North Carolina as well, where the arts institutes in Durham and Charlotte both forced to close their doors. This lawsuit is one of many facing Education Secretary Betsy DeVos and the Department of Education as they roll back rules meant to protect student borrowers. Joining us is Danielle Douglas-Gabriel. She's a higher education reporter who's been reporting on this for The Washington Post. Danielle, welcome to the State of Things.
Thanks for having me.
So on the surface, this looks great. Here's the administration taking up for these students $11 million in loans wiped off the books. Thank you, Betsy DeVos. But the fact is they really had to be dragged kicking and screaming into this. Give us the backstory here.
So the Department of Education issued about $11 million worth of loans in the last year to four art institute locations in Colorado, Michigan, as well as Illinois. And that money should have never gone to those schools because they weren't fully accredited. And for for-profit colleges to receive full participation in the federal student aid program, they have to be fully accredited. And at the time, those schools were not. When the department, I don't know if they just became aware of it, but decided that they needed to address the issue in May of last year, they actually switched the for-profit status to nonprofit for those schools to make it appear that the issuing of that money was still on the up and up. What happened recently is after it became news that the department was engaging in this behavior, and the House Democrats released a bunch of documents showing how the department was taking steps behind the scenes to switch the status of these schools to essentially cover their misdeeds as well as cover this company's misdeeds, the department decided, hey, well, actually, we're going to cancel the $11 million we issued in loans for that year and make sure that the students don't have to pay that money back. At the same time, the department is also facing a lawsuit with that exact aim. So their decision to take these steps, you know, comes at a time where they're facing increased scrutiny because of their own behavior.
Well, talk about this behavior. It was not the institutions that initiated this change in status. The Department of Education just went ahead and changed their status. They initiated it and simply did it by fiat. How do you do that?
Well, at the time, the company Dream Center was trying to get the Department of Education, as well as its accreditor and the IRS, to change the status of the schools from for-profit to nonprofit, as a part of an effort to make the schools seem more reputable, to kind of put them on a right path. But when Dream Center purchased the chain of for-profit schools, they were already facing lots of troubles. Their accreditor was kind of questioning some of the quality of their education already. But once they were purchased by Dream Center, that same accreditor raised some concerns about the schools and said, well, we're not going to give you full approval for this. We're actually going to downgrade a few of your campuses while we see if you can improve the way that they are functioning for the students. And, you know, the department was well within its right to change and switch that conversion and certainly say, well, you guys were already in the process, so we're just going to temporarily grant you this status. But it just happened that they were doing this while it was starting to become clear that the department was sending money to schools that were, for all intents and purposes, unaccredited.
So the Department of Education is making loans to institutions that it shouldn't have because they're not accredited.
Yeah.
And they continued to bill the students even after it was clear that they were that the students had been defrauded by these institutions.
Yeah.
They continued to bill the students. So tell me more about this. And then it took a lawsuit to get them finally to wipe the loan off the books.
Yes. So several students from those campuses said, wait a second. These schools are unaccredited. From what we can tell, you knew. You continue to give us loans. You want us to pay back this money, even though the schools should have probably shut down before then, before we were ever in a position to have to take on this additional money. The department is not saying that the lawsuit prompted its decision last week, and it's not saying that the information that's been revealed by the House Education Committee about its behavior also prompted the decision to erase the loans, but it is happening at a time when all of these things are kind of converging and creating a picture that doesn't paint the department in the best of light.
Well, talk about Betsy DeVos and the Department of Education now under the Trump administration and how their views about accountability for particularly for-profit institutions has changed since the Obama administration.
The Department of Education under DeVos has taken a position that the Obama administration unfairly persecuted for-profit institutes, and they should be held to the exact same standards as private nonprofits, as public institutions. Everyone should be held to the same standards. But even though the department says that, they're not exactly implementing any accountability measures to meet that fiat. So it's happening with the regulations that were meant to protect students from the worst actors within the for-profit sector. And to be clear, not all for-profit colleges operate in the same manner. There are very many that do right by their students. But for the ones that don't, a lot of the behavior is pretty egregious, and that's why there was regulations put in place like gainful employment, which essentially said that you can't consistently year after year graduate students that are not making enough money to pay back their student loans. If you're saying you're a career training school, this is a career training program, then you have to do right by your students and ensure that they are placed in jobs that are going to help them pursue their dreams and do well. And it wasn't only just for profits. It was also community colleges and any kind of school that offered these sorts of vocational training programs. But the department under DeVos has said, well, look, we don't think that we should unfairly demonize for-profit institutions, so we're going to kind of delay and roll back as much as we can. Unfortunately, in doing so, a lot of the same kind of predatory behavior that necessitated the regulations in the first place is starting to creep up again.
Well, let's talk a little bit more about that, because on the face of it, you would say, well, Betsy DeVos is right. Shouldn't every institution be held to the same standard? Look, if you're not making enough money, you pay a lot of money to go to the school. If you can't make that income to pay back your loans, you know, why aren't public institutions held to the same standard?
College is supposed to be in part a means to an end, and that end should be getting a job. But you know, your local flagship is not saying that this is the only purpose of you becoming an English major. But if you're going to a vocational school that is saying, we are going to train you in this specific vocation for you to get this job, and our job placement rates are this, that, or the third, this is what you should expect upon graduation, that's kind of a different picture. And if you're going to make those claims, all the Department of Education used to say was, you have to back it up. And if you're not backing it up, we can't continue to send you taxpayer money to graduate students that are not able to get jobs.
Danielle Douglas-Gabriel is higher education reporter for The Washington Post. Danielle, thank you so much for your reporting.
Thank you.
Well, we're talking about some of the politics behind student loans, and now let's dig deeper into the lives of student borrowers. Pew Charitable Trusts has new research that paints a picture of the challenges that borrowers face after taking on these loans. Sarah Saddlemeyer manages Pew's Student Borrower Success Project, and she joins us now. Hello, Sarah.
Hi, how are you?
I'm doing very well, and I know there's been a lot of research, and you've just done a recent look at some of that research about who is most likely to default on a student loan. Can you give us a picture?
Sure. So today, 43 million Americans hold a federal student loan, and approximately 1 in 5 of those is in default. So to give a little bit of context, defaulting on a loan can come with some pretty severe financial consequences. Borrowers can have their wages garnished, they can have their credit damaged, and they can face some pretty hefty collection fees. We know that before they even enter repayment, there are some groups who are more likely to default. For example, and counterintuitively, those with the lowest balances, so often less than $10,000, who may not have gotten a return on investment from their degree or who may not have completed. In addition, borrowers of color, particularly African Americans, are more likely to have worse outcomes, and those who attended for-profit and to a much lesser extent community colleges as well. The report that we recently put out really underscores, though, that it's also important to look at who's struggling within the repayment system, to think about what are some red flags that signal to us that more and additional resources could be needed to help people repay.
I just want to go back to something you said right at the top. One in five, 20% of people who have college loans are in default. How does that compare to other kind of loan ratios in the commercial world, other kinds of loan default rates?
It's actually much higher, but for good reason, in the sense that a mortgage or some of the other loans you can get are underwritten. Student loans are not underwritten. And we as a society and as a country have made the decision that anyone who wants to go to college should be able to make an investment in themselves.
But as you said, the failure to pay back has consequences that will follow you for a long, long time. I want to continue this conversation. I'm talking to Sarah Saddlemeyer, who manages Pew's Student Borrower Success Project. And we're going to talk more about their research on who is in default and who is close to default and what this means for our student loan system. And we'll talk more about that on the State of Things from North Carolina Public Radio. It's a broadcast service of the University of North Carolina at Chapel Hill. Stay tuned. This is the State of Things broadcasting from the American Tobacco Historic District. I'm Frank Stacio. We've been talking about student loans. Nearly 43 million people in the U.S. with federal student loans. 20% are in default. Pew Charitable Trust recently collected data on 400,000 borrowers. We're talking to Sarah Saddlemeyer, who is the manager of Pew's Student Borrower Success Project, talking about those numbers. You know, you said earlier that by far the most were those that the students in default had gone to for-profit institutions and then to a lesser extent community colleges. And that's interesting to me because those are institutions in general that tend to be vocational and tend to be the ones who promise to get you a job when you're done. What's going on there?
You know, I think that's a great question. And there are a host of things going on, including students maybe not getting a return on investment from the degree they have. But really another problem that we're seeing is that once these students enter the repayment system, it doesn't work for everyone. It's complex, it's outdated, and it often undermines borrowers' efforts to repay their loans.
Let's talk more about that, about the complexity, the fact that some students are eligible for sliding scales and for other kind of benefits, but you say because of the complexities, they don't always know that.
Right. So income-driven plans, which you just mentioned, and which, thinking about their title, indicate that people can make payments based on their income, can really be a lifeline to affordable payments for many borrowers. But entering these plans and re-entering them every year is really complex, and it means that a lot of people who would be eligible and could benefit from this support aren't getting it.
So what are your recommendations after seeing these numbers?
So we think there are three things that the Department of Education and Congress can do to really make the repayment system work better for borrowers. The first is identify at-risk borrowers before they're in distress. The second is providing these borrowers with resources and support when and where it's needed. And the third is to eliminate barriers to enrollment in affordable repayment plans, which we just chatted about.
What would that do? I mean, identifying students at risk, you know, you come dangerously close to profiling. I mean, what do you do with that once you've identified that student?
Right. I mean, that's a great question. We can make sure that attention is being given to people when and where we're seeing these red flags. So, for example, when we think about student loans, we tend to just think about snapshots in time. So who's struggling today and what does that mean? But that's not how families think about their money. It's not how they budget, and it doesn't help us identify people before they struggle. So what the research we did really shows is that looking over a longer period of time, we can identify who struggles and when and where and how we can inject additional resources. So it's not saying this predetermined group of borrowers, you know, are someone that we're going to pay attention to. It's saying in real time when we're seeing someone exhibit signs of struggling, like missing a payment really early on in repayment or pausing payments for long periods of time, multiple times, those might be places where we could intervene and provide additional support.
Sarah Saddlemeyer is manager of the Student Borrower Success Project for Pew Charitable Trust. Sarah, thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you.